Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and usually we kick off the hour with our Week in Review on Friday, but we had to deal with those two breaking news stories regarding the Trump administration. So now at 21 past the hour, it's time for the Week in Review, and joining us to do so is Susan Tracy, president of the Democratic Consulting Firm, the Strategy Group. She's also a former state rep, and it is great to see you again, Susan.
Thank you, Meghna. Nice to be here.
Also with us is Charlie Chippio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute and head of Chippio Strategies. Charlie, it's great to see you as well.
Good to be here. Thank you.
So we just talked to John Kingsdale about cost-sharing subsidies going away per President Donald Trump. I just wanted to start there and get reaction from both of you. Susan, what do you make of it?
You know, where do you start is how I feel, to be honest with you. You watched President candidate Trump and President Trump, and he's been on a mission to destroy Obamacare, you know, repeal and replace. It's a disaster. It's a failing system. He's shortened the sign-up period. He's cut the marketing budget. He's created an exemption. You know, last week we didn't even talk about the exemption to employers who, on religious or moral beliefs, want to cut contraception services for people. Now, alternative plans that people can get through small groups. I think what hits me the most is just how vindictive and uninformed these decisions are. You know, I think my new thought is like everything is like one big paper towel roll toss. You know,
a la Puerto Rico.
It's just sort of like, you know, people are never talked about. Poor people are never considered. How you affect
people.
Very
inconvenient.
Yeah, it is just devastating.
But the president, I mean, as a candidate, well, and actually even as president, he keeps talking about doing these things for, in his words, the forgotten people of America. He genuinely believes, or at least says that he believes that he's doing this to help Americans. I mean, Charlie,
well,
that's what he was saying healthcare.
And I think that, you know, when our grandchildren read about the Trump administration, I think the story is going to be that. The story is going to be that it was the people who were so loyally behind him who were most hurt by his policies. I think that that's exactly true. I think John Kingsdale said it all, you know, where this is just his attempt to sort of roll the hand grenade in the room. I mean, he is clearly will stop at nothing to get rid of Obamacare. Look, I think Obamacare is very imperfect, but clearly what needs to be done here is the sides need to get together and they need to work out the problems and come to an agreement and fix it.
I mean, that's the irony. I think everybody, Democrats and Republicans, think Obamacare is imperfect
right.
and needs fixes. The fear was always if we start to fix it, then, you know, it's all going to unravel. And it's
right.
going to become so political that no one's really going to get done what needs to be done. I'm just waiting for the mature people on both sides of the aisle to start to care about people instead of politics.
Well,
cue the crickets.
I was wondering if that is possible for as long as an incredibly powerful vocal minority, and I'm thinking on the GOP side of things, don't want to fix Obamacare. They just really want it to go away.
Well, the people who want it to go away, we probably are never going to get. We need the people in the middle. We need the moderates. You know, I don't know about anyone else. I was thrilled that Susan Collins is staying. I think that's an important voice to have at the table here. And hopefully that'll be inspirational for some other Republicans who are moderate to speak up. I mean, Corker has seen the light. Maybe we'll get some others. We need Republicans and Democrats to come together and care about people and not politics.
I mean, speaking of Corker, it's because he's not running for re-election, right?
I mean,
absolutely. But, you know, maybe he'll be inspirational to others. I don't know.
Well, Charlie, before I get the last thought from you on healthcare, I want to play one piece of tape from an eponymous Charlie Baker, because we spoke with the governor just yesterday about the president's moves on healthcare. And here's what he said concerns him about Trump's executive action.
You know, as governor of Massachusetts, the thing I hear all the time from cities and towns is don't do stuff to us without including us in the conversation, okay? And to the best of my knowledge, there aren't a lot of states that have been involved in the conversation associated with something that's currently being proposed by the federal government that has real consequences for states. So from a process point of view, that concerns me all by itself. But in addition to that, my major watchword on this is going to be to figure out if this has real negative consequences on our ability or on the ability of other states to support the communities and the people in their communities with respect to their health care and their health care coverage.
So that was Governor Baker yesterday. And, of course, today he said officially that he thinks it's a terrible idea about the cost-sharing subsidies going away and hopes that, that it doesn't happen. But, Charlie, I mean, maybe like... As we frequently find ourselves in Massachusetts, perhaps we're in a better place than some other states, if indeed the subsidies
do
go away.
Well, we are in a better place than other states. But nonetheless, I mean, look, it was just news before this all hit about how the for the folks who are on the connector plans, their rates were only going to go up 8.7%, which is less than people thought they would. And that's great. And now they're saying that they may go up by a quarter as a result of this.
Right.
So, as I said, there's a lot of work that has to be done on healthcare, and I think there's a real gulf between what the American people expect and what they're willing to pay for. But, again, the sort of Trump style of like blowing it up and seeing where the pieces land just does not seem to be particularly prudent to me.
All right. Well, here. Let's switch gears, entirely to another big story, which has really gotten a lot of people talking, and I'm talking about Harvey Weinstein and all those allegations and settlements over his serial sexual harassment. Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie joining the growing number of actresses accusing Weinstein. And one of the things that came out this week through reporting from The New Yorker from reporting via The New Yorker is this tape of a 2015 NYPD sting involving Weinstein and young actress Amber Gutierrez. She wore a wire, and here's what she caught.
I don't feel comfortable.
I mean, don't have a fight with me.
It's not nice.
Please, I'm not going to do anything. I swear, my children, please come in. On everything, I'm a famous guy.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable right now.
Please come in now. And 1 minute, and if you want to leave, when the guy comes with my jacket,
you can go. Why yesterday you touched my breast?
Oh, please, I'm sorry. Just come on. I'm used to that.
Are you used to that?
Yes, come in.
No, but I'm not used to that.
I won't do it again. Come on. Sit here.
My brother sent this to me the other day, and if you listen to it, this went on and on and on. Unbelievable.
The visceral disgust that I felt hearing it yet again, it's still there. And I feel like, Susan, that there's just this like underlying... I feel like we hear it. We're talking about this again and again. We were talking about it during the election with the president, talking about it now. I mean, what's going on here?
You know, I had two thoughts on it. One is how sad it is that it doesn't surprise me. You know, it's Roger Ailes. It's Bill Cosby. It's the president. It's
Bill O'Reilly.
And, you know, quite frankly, let's roll the clock back. It's Anita Hill. And it's Clarence Thomas, who sits on the United States Supreme Court. You know, after Anita Hill, there was a movement. We changed some laws. We a lot of women candidates came forward, and we're still here in the same place. It's amazing to me. You think about Gwyneth Paltrow, and you think about Angelina Jolie. If people like that were afraid to come forward, who have power in that dynamic, presumably, think about like the average person who's just, you know, young and trying to break out. They're terrified by that.
One of the women he did this to, it was a girl, was 17 years old. Yeah. Could you imagine being 17 years old?
The sad thing is, Charlie, I remember when Anita Hill happened. Megna, I'm sure this is true for you. You know, I went to school in Brighton and I was with all my friends and, you know, everybody has a story.
Yeah.
Everybody. You have a 14-year-old daughter. She's going to have a story, Charlie. I hate to tell you that.
Oh, please.
But everybody has a story.
You know, I think it was 26 years ago this week, I believe, or near this week, that Professor Hill gave her testimony in front of the Senate. And I sent out a tweet a couple of days ago that said, all you have to do is go back and listen to the way the senators treated her at that time to understand why the problem isn't really going away. Now, to that point, I want to play some tape from Emma Thompson. She spoke to the BBC just yesterday, and she told the BBC that she herself had been unaware of the allegations against Weinstein, but that they did not surprise her.
This has been part of our world, women's world, since time immemorial. So what we need to start talking about is the crisis in masculinity, the crisis of extreme masculinity, which is this sort of behavior, and the fact that it is not only okay, but it also is represented by the most powerful man in the world at the moment.
I think that was Emma Thompson making a reference to the president there. But Charlie, I mean, this Emma Thompson underlining the crisis in masculinity, I feel like that's a conversation maybe that people are more willing to have now than perhaps they were. Well, no one ever talked about it during Anita Hill's time. Do you think there's a crisis in masculinity?
Well, yeah, I'm not sure I know what a crisis in masculinity is. But, you know, but I mean, clearly there is a huge problem here. And while I think if Anita Hill happened today, you'd probably have senators up there treating her with a little respect, a little more respect, only because of their being concerned about their public image. The reality is that the behaviors have not changed. Susan talked about how she's not surprised by this. I think it's the tip of the iceberg. And I don't just mean the tip of the iceberg in terms of this just avalanche of women coming out talking about Harvey Weinstein. I mean, I wonder how many other people, you know, in Hollywood or elsewhere, you know, are doing exactly the same thing. You know?
I was just going to say it's certainly everywhere. And I think, you know, for it to change, it has to be both men and women have to want it to change. You know, it was not lost on me that every time they reported on the Weinstein Corporation, they talked about its all male board.
Right. Right. Several of whom resigned. And then they ended up firing him. But, I mean, we had Nancy Gertner on the show saying, like, you can't imagine this company having existed this long with this much bad behavior from its co-founder and not knowing about it.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. By the way, it's just a
Uber, by the way, is another example of that.
Right, right.
As a side note, I just wanted – I mentioned that the tape from the NYPD, the New Yorker, obtained. And I just do want to give a tip of the hat to Ronan Farrow, who, by the way, did a lot of this reporting and originally was going to do it for NBC. But they decided not to run with his report, so he went to the New Yorker. There still is this that subtext there of how powerful Weinstein must have been or was for NBC to not want to run a very extensively reported piece from Ronan Farrow. Now, I also want to play one more piece of tape on this, simply because politics is never far away, sadly, from issues of sexual harassment. And here it is.
I was just sick. I was shocked. I was appalled. It was something that was just intolerable in every way. And, you know, like so many people who have come forward and spoken out, this was a different side of a person who I and many others had known in the past.
And that, of course, is Hillary Clinton speaking to CNN. And she, the story isn't about her. It's about Harvey Weinstein. But nevertheless, it was also made about her because they're close friends and he's a major donor. And it took her days to come out and condemn him. I mean, is that a problem? Should I have even played that tape? Or are we just distracting ourselves from the real issue here, which is sexual harassment and Weinstein?
A little bit of a distraction from the real issue. I mean, you know, it's kind of this is about Harvey Weinstein. It's not about Weinstein. It's not about Hillary Clinton. I would also add, if the person who I worried about the most was Barack Obama, whose daughter worked for him.
Whose daughter was an intern
in the office. So, you know, not her fault.
And given, you know, the fact that, you know, there's certainly some evidence that her husband was a serial sexual harasser as well, you would think that she might want to speak out on it. And again, I think it just really speaks to just how powerful this guy was.
Yeah. All right. Well, so let's move on and talk about something else again entirely. This closer to home. Did you know that the MBTA's commuter rail is number one in America for breakdowns? Because that's what the Federal Transit Administration is saying. And here's some reaction from commuter rail writer Lori Sanofsky in what she said to NBC Boston.
I was home 20 minutes late, an hour late. You never knew when the train was coming or if it was going to break down. It's been awful.
Okay, so the Federal Transit Administration said that the commuter rail broke down some 338 times in 2016. Charlie, I'm going to tee this one up for you.
Well, I didn't know it until I saw the report, but I certainly wasn't shocked by it. I'll tell you that. Look, this issue, this gets to what, you know, sort of my big concern is now. You know, I'm T obsessed, as you know, and you know, the T, very few people know how bad it had gotten by 2015. And the reality is that to fix this thing is going to take a very long time. I mean, I think a lot of the right moves have been made in the last 2 years, and we're still not even in a place where the average rider necessarily even notices it. And my big fear with the T is that there's not going to be enough patience to match. The political forces are going to be too strong, and that voters are not going to remain patient for as long as they need to, because this is going to take a very long time to fix.
So could they remain patient for at least another couple of years? Because Governor Charlie Baker was asked about this yesterday, and he said, hey, the T's been underinvested for over a decade, and you can't fix it in just 2 years.
We believe, based on a lot of the work people did over the course of the past year and a half, that in 17, our performance, the T's performance, the commuter rail's performance will be significantly better. But yeah, we got a really long way to go on this. I mean, we're planning to spend almost $1 billion a year for the next 4 years on the T's core infrastructure. And that's as it should be and as it should have been for more or less the past decade.
Okay, so Susan, I too belong to the Rome wasn't built in a day camp. But on the other hand, riders have been suffering for years and years and years and years already. I mean, how much longer can we ask them to be patient?
Yeah. People are not going to be patient. Yeah. I also think it's kind of ironic that we have all of that going on at a time when the city's booming,
right,
and the need is increasing. I mean, the numbers of people who are moving in and moving closer to the city grow every day, and our capacity weakens. You know, I don't know how many creative fixes we can do. I don't know how much we can, you know, squeeze out efficiencies out of the system. At some point, we probably need some more money. The other thing I found really interesting in a Mass Taxpayers report, the other issue facing us is climate change.
Yeah.
And that's going to really tax this aging system as well. So we got a lot of problems. You know, it's great, you know, reform before revenue, but I think we're going to need some revenue at some point.
That's the thing that we haven't talked about. That is the third rail, if I can use that pun, in this conversation.
And we will need revenue at some point. But I do think the one thing that I think should happen is that, you know, we need to do reforms that are very customer focused, and we need to be able to have metrics that are out there that are public that show that things are getting better. Because the reality is, I think that's what we need to have people be open to the additional investment.
Greater transparency in terms of actual performance. Yeah.
Yep.
You know what? This is the kind of week where we've had so many ups and downs and left and rights that I actually have totally mismanaged the time here on this segment. So can you do a 5-second hubbub, a 10-second hubbub? Can you give me a headline, Susan?
Well, my hubbub was just going to be, you know, hurricanes, fires, nuclear war, racial unrest, the Red Sox losing. I liked the story about the family who owns the house that was used for Breaking Bad, where they're putting a fence up because people keep throwing pizzas on their roof. I needed some humor this week.
Okay.
So, Charlie, I'm so sorry, but we're going to end with the Breaking Bad pizza hubbub today, okay?
Right.
Susan Tracy, president of the Strategy Group and former state rep, thank you so much.
Thanks, Magna. Thanks, Charlie.
And Charlie Chipio, senior fellow at the Pioneer Institute. Always great to have you, Charlie. Thank you again.
All right. Good to be here.
We'll be back. I'm Magna Chakrabarty with Better Time Management next time. This is Radio Boston.